Illinois public schools get funded is complicated, convoluted, and contentious.
Governor Rauner wants to blame the Democrats, and Democrats want to be able to blame Rauner. I don't care who's to blame. We're ready to see some results and be reasonable and get a budget.
That's David Lett, superintendent of Pena School District 8. He and others from across the state are gathering at the Capitol this afternoon to bring attention to the issue of school funding. Earlier this week, they sent a letter to Governor Rauner saying that without it, many districts won't be able to open this fall. Today, we speak with Lett and other districts across the state to get a picture of what's actually happening and how students, teachers, and communities are being affected. Also, hundreds of dogs in Illinois are coming down with a canine flu. We'll talk to a vet about what pet owners need to know about this new strain. All that and more coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. When lawmakers left Springfield last week without a budget, they also left school districts all across the state hanging. And it took just a few days for some to say, we may not be able to open this fall. Here's what 15 school superintendents said in a letter they sent to Governor Rauner on Monday. This is a disaster that plagues districts across Illinois. It is not a downstate versus Chicago or a city versus suburban issue, but rather a statewide problem. And as superintendents of school districts whose students will suffer the gravest consequences, it is our shared concern. Today, we're talking with some of those superintendents who signed that letter. They're actually gathering in the Capitol this afternoon for a news conference to address the issue. We're also going to be speaking with school districts that didn't sign that letter. And what we want to know is, regardless of where they stand on the myriad of school funding proposals that are floating around, how are districts dealing with this current lack of funding? How is this affecting classrooms or teachers? And of course, most of all, the students. And how are they preparing for an upcoming academic school year in the absence of a budget? As always, as we have this conversation, we welcome your questions and comments about this. Are you worried about your school not opening this fall? What message do you want lawmakers to know? Give us a call. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show. Again, our phone number, 1-800-222-9455. We'd love to hear from parents, from teachers, from other school districts. We're going to be going all over the state today, but we wanted to start in Southern Illinois in Pope County with Chuck Blyer, the superintendent of Pope County Community School District 1. Superintendent Blyer, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Nyla.
Pope County is at the very southern tip of Illinois. Can you tell us a little bit about the area and the school district that you serve?
Sure. Pope County is considered to be one of the most beautiful spots in Illinois. There's a huge Shawnee National Forest that runs through the entire county, and we border the Ohio River. And we look into Kentucky from where I am right now in Golconda, which is the capital seat of the county. Lots of forests, lots of spacious lands, farmers, it's a huge hunting capital of the state, lots of resorts for hunters. Fishing is enormous. Outdoor activities, horseback riding, you name it, that's the kind of atmosphere we have here. We're a little bit off the beaten path. We don't have a major highway running through our county, so you have to actually, if you're coming here, you're wanting to come here.
You're intending to come.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about the district? I know you have 550 students.
Yes, a little bit over 550, depending on kind of how the year flows. But it's a unit district. It was consolidated years ago, and we were all in one spot, and we have two school buildings, a high school and a K-8.
How have reduced funds over the years affected your district in terms of programs?
There have been numerous programs cut over the years. Many years ago, Polk County decided to address this problem because they saw it as an issue coming down the pike. So there were rifts made in certain programs. And just last year, we had to riff a teacher, a position to a Spanish teacher from a full day to just 2/8 of a day. But on the outside, you have a lot of other spots that are support, like cooks and aides and buses and bus drivers, all that support staff, maintenance. All those have been trimmed over the years, and they continue to be trimmed.
As it stands now with current funding, I wonder how much room there is, if there's more that you can even trim as you're thinking about how to run this district.
I MAD basically condition critical. It's at that point now, if you start trimming, you basically are losing all the robust parts of what it was to go to school in America, which were the other extracurricular activities, other electives, the choir, you know, anything. In fact, the band that used to be a big part of this district was RIFT a long time ago because it was just running out of the ability to keep funded. So that's one right there that's gone that many other districts do have that we do not longer have.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know we're speaking with Superintendent Chuck Blyer from Pope County Community School District 1. And, Superintendent, I understand that about 60% of your budget does come from the state. I wonder what you're thinking about with all of these different funding formulas and proposals out there. How are you being affected by the different things that are being proposed? What would you like to see the funding formula look like?
You're correct in 60% for state funding. This district here is strong middle class, and in doing so, that means most people here own their own property. So when you have a funding formula like the one that is currently in play, it really hurts family-owned property, homes in that nature. And the reason why is that the formula reduces your general state aid from your local wealth. So as I look out and try to manage for next year, I will go and I'll ask the community for more money through a levy. But when I do that, I have to be very cautious because they're being burdened already with high property taxes as is. So there's that property and tax situation that is ongoing throughout the state. It's not just here, but the funding formula that was put forth by Andy Menard did have a property tax break in it. The one that's being proposed by the governor is just to fully fund general state aid. That may sound great, but in our situation, if we were fully funded with general state aid, we would lose money.
Okay. And in a way, I know it's an unusual situation. I don't know if it's an unusual situation you're in of being, you're a middle-class district. You don't necessarily have high poverty levels as you're describing, but you're also, as you've explained to us, it's not heavily populated. So in a way, it's almost, I know in the past you've described this as a catch-22. Can you explain a little bit further how that would be that way for people?
Sure. If you live in my county, which I do, the situation is that where I ask the community for more money to improve the school district. Problem is that we counted up last year around nearly 700 actual taxing capable homes throughout our estates throughout the district. That might seem small, but when you have all these exemptions in play, it's a pretty accurate number. Since I don't have that large base that an Urbana would have or a Champaign, when I have to go levy for money, it really impacts people individually. So I probably know everybody that I'm going to tax personally. I've met in some way. That's a strong conflict for me as the person trying to push forward. The state, on the other hand, when they come in, they say, you need to tax them more, or we're not going to give you more general state aid. That formula in itself is the catch-22. If the state's going to penalize me, if I don't, and the people here are screaming, please no more, we're kind of tapped out already.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in the middle.
Superintendent, in the absence of a state budget or any other stopgap funding or all the other things that have been floating around, if you don't get any money, will you be able to open this fall?
I can open. This district has remained conservative for many years and has cash on hand. I can tell you this much. I worry about opening because I know districts around me that are going to either probably not open or close within a few weeks of opening. The odd thing that might happen is that if a district does not open around me, I'm going to see a huge influx of students.
Oh, right, because they'll send those kids around.
Will
end up, wow, that's
yes.
a Yeah. Well, thanks for pointing that out. And thank you so much for taking the time to join us. That's Superintendent Chuck Blyer joining us from Southern Illinois, where he's in charge of Pope County Community School District 1. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Nyla.
We're going to be speaking with Champaign County's school district later on in the hour. But joining us now from Springfield is David Lett. He's superintendent of Pena Community Unit School District 8. Pena's about 35 miles almost due south of Decatur. But Superintendent Lett is joining us from the Capitol because he's getting ready for a press conference that's going to take place later on this afternoon. Superintendent Lett, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you, Nyla.
How would you describe your district for folks who aren't familiar?
I would describe our district as a large rural district with 221 square miles. We are now or have become somewhat of a bedroom community to Decatur and Springfield. There is not much in the way of economic opportunity in Pena any longer. Most of the business and industry has dried up. And so as a result, many of our people commute to larger areas for employment.
And how much funding do you depend on from the state for funding the district?
Basically, Nyla, about two-thirds of our funding comes from state and federal sources. And about one-third of our funding sources come from our local property taxpayers.
I know, Superintendent Lett, you've worked with Senator Menard for years on the funding formula and what he's proposed, and I want to get into that in just a minute. But I first wanted to just ask you about the past year and how you all have managed in the past couple of years with the funding formula changes and how that's affected your district in particular.
Well, Nyla, when proration was introduced a little over 5 years ago, we began actually even a little in advance of beginning to pare back. And we have, over the course of 6 to 7 years, cut 20% of our teaching staff, 15% of our support staff, and 25% of our administrative staff. Fortunately, we've been able to do most of that through natural attrition, in other words, retirements that we haven't replaced. But we have made some reductions in force along the way as well.
And I know that how much programs have you had to cut as well?
We have reduced our ag programming, which is a supplemental elective at the high school level. And we have been reducing our elementary classes as it relates to the number of sections. And so we've seen our class sizes grow as a result of having to allow that to happen, which is obviously a concern to us. Anytime you, particularly in concentrations of poverty like we have in Pena, you allow your class sizes to grow, you are reducing the amount of support for kids that need it the most.
And I know one of the things you've had to cut are teacher assistants helping with reading and math. What have you been hearing from teachers in those classrooms?
Well, I think they feel unduly burdened, and I think they're really somewhat frustrated and downtrodden at times, because I think they view what they had before as being better able to help and support children. And they're basically, the motto of this state has become doing more with less. And so as a result, they're having to do that in the classroom. And I think they feel pretty burdened by that and pretty disappointed that they can't provide more support to those kids.
Have you had to do things like reach out? I don't know if it's possible to have parent involvement and having parents come in the classroom and help.
We do have a mentoring program where we have an elementary mentoring and a high school mentoring program, and we do try to provide a little support through that. Most of those are retirees that have come back and been willing to serve one day a week or so in terms of providing support to some of our neediest children. And so that helps a little bit, but it's not the same as having a paid employee there 5 days a week.
We're speaking with the superintendent of Pena Community Unit School District 8, David Lett. It's one of the superintendents who signed a letter to Governor Rauner on Monday talking about school funding. And I know that the issue of how schools are funded is a very complex issue, but I wanted to ask you a simple question about how you think you've been affected by the funding situation, but how you'd also like to have it resolved.
Well, I think the way we've been affected is that we've seen the support for the classroom dwindle. And as a result, I think we're not doing all that we can do for the children that need it the most in our district. And that's, I think, discouraging to our classroom educators. It's discouraging to me from the superintendent seat because we know that with the resources that we had 6 or 7 years ago, that we were doing a very good job. Our test scores are reflective somewhat of what we've seen happening to our funding. Our test scores were at or above state averages 6 or 7 years ago, and we've seen our overall test scores decline as a result of a lack of support for the classroom.
Superintendent, I'm going to stop you there because we're just about to take a break, because I know the second half of this, what you'd like to see, is going to be a longer answer than we're going to have time for. So if everyone will just hold on for a minute or two while we take a break, we're going to pick up this conversation with Superintendent Lett and also be joined by the folks from Champaign Unit 4 School District and later Advance Illinois to also help us make sense of how all of these districts compare. If you have questions or comments, you can tweet us at 21st Show. You can give us a call. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. Again, that's 1-800-222-9455. And we'll continue this conversation in just a minute or two.
The 21st is made possible by the library at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, fostering discovery by providing information curation and archival services to extend scholarly impact from Urbana-Champaign to the state, the nation, and the world. The University Library at Illinois.
Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking about funding for K through 12 schools, and we've been talking to superintendents. We started with Pope County in Southern Illinois. On the line with us right now, we're talking about Pena, south of Springfield. In studio with me as well, we're going to be talking to Champaign, and we've got folks from Chicago joining us as well. You're welcome to join the conversation about school funding. And we know people have lots of questions about this. If you have comments, if you're worried as a parent, is my school going to open this fall? If you want to voice that, or if you want to send any other message to lawmakers about school funding, give us a call. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show. Paul says that the Eikenberry tax swap was a revenue neutral solution for school funding. That was something proposed back. I know that was former UIUC president back in the 90s. Raising income tax and a graduated property tax cut could solve many of issues. That's Paul's thoughts. What are yours? You can give us a call again, 1-800-222-9455. Superintendent Lett, I wonder if you can tell us, right before the break, you were giving us a sense of the impact of how the current funding formula has affected your district over the past couple of years. As I mentioned, you've been working very closely with Senator Menard for a very long time on the school funding proposal. What would you like to see happen now?
Well, I think first and foremost, we need a K-12 budget. We need the leaders in Springfield to come together, inclusive of the governor, and make children a priority and get this accomplished here before July 1st. That's issue number one. Issue number two, that solution needs to be equitable. And we believe Senator Menard's proposal was the best solution. But if it's not Senator Menard's proposal, we want equity to be a part of the final solution in the final budget.
And when you say equity, what do you mean by that?
What we mean by that is that districts that are dependent upon general state aid, PANA, Polk County and others that have been unduly burdened and damaged by proration of general state aid, that we see children of poverty, you know, considered in the final budgetary solution, whether that's through an equity grant or whether that's through the poverty grant of the formula, having more money run through it to help those children. That's what I speak of.
And when we are talking about, when you're talking about regardless of whatever happens for the fall, let's say that we're in worst case scenario where we are right now, actually, which is there's no funding for schools for the fall. Would you all be able to open?
Pena would be able to open. We would be able to function probably for about 7 to 8 months of the fiscal year before we would have to borrow.
If you can hold on a second, we've got a caller from Springfield who has a question for us that I'd love to either have you, and I want to introduce Tom Lockman, who's in studio with us as well, here in Champaign. He's the Chief Financial and Legal Officer of Champaign Unit 4 School District. Tom, thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
We've got a caller who has a question about actually students of autism and funding and how much the formula, if that's affected that. Hey, Mike, welcome to the 21st. What's your specific question?
Well, my specific question would be, will the funding cuts affect school districts that are utilizing applied behavior analysis in this in within their district to assist the students with autism, along the autism spectrum? Applied behavior analysis is one of the leading interventions that's even approved by the U.S. Surgeon General as being very, very effective for children with autism. It's basically trying to break down the topography and the function of the behaviors so that they could really start to learn how to navigate their environments. And the superintendents probably know that. But my question was, how is that funding going to affect those intense programs?
Superintendent Letts, I wonder if you can, I don't know if you could address that specifically, that specific program, but maybe you could talk about special education funding as well and how that's been affected under the current formula.
Well, I think, Nyla, that special education funding is protected through federal law, which requires the same maintenance of effort each fiscal year. And so as a result, I think that requires all districts to spend the same amount of dollars on children with individualized educational plans, IEPs. So I think that's a protected area. Now, whether or not that continues to be protected, if there's no funding at all on the state side, would be an interesting dilemma. But I do think that that funding's protected.
Superintendent Lett, one last question for you. What message do you want to send to Governor Rauner this afternoon?
Well, I think just that we would not, you know, I heard a quote from him, you know, mudslinging. I think that goes both ways for both parties. I think that needs to be set aside, and we need to put children first.
Superintendent David Lett is in charge of Pena Community Unit, School District 8. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Nyla.
As in studio with me, I mentioned from Champaign, Tom Lockman is the Chief Financial and Legal Officer of Unit 4 School District. Tom, I know that about 600 Unit 4 seniors just graduated and got their diploma, and it's usually the time of year when you guys would be taking a breather. As we've heard already, I imagine it's fair to say that's not happening right now.
No, we are certainly trying to, as best we can, stay on top of what's happening across the board, particularly in Springfield, as it relates to some of the different funding proposals that have been brought forward.
Now, what we previously heard were two districts where the majority of their funding did come from the state. That's not necessarily the case for Champaign. I wonder if you could explain how much Champaign's school district is reliant on state funding in comparison to what we've already heard.
Sure. So our district in Unit 4 were primarily funded by local property taxes, and the strength of the local property tax base is something that, you know, is beneficial to our district and is something that we believe as a community we have kind of all built up together and that Champaign is a destination community. We receive 65 to 70% of our revenues from local property taxes, about 15% from state sources, and 12 to 15% from federal sources.
And obviously that's not to say, I don't want, and as a comparison, that doesn't mean that you guys have tons of money that you're kind of rolling around for school funding here, right? I want to ask you the same question I asked the two other school districts. How have you been grappling with funding over the past couple of years? Because I imagine it hasn't been an easy situation.
So the biggest challenges relate to just planning and having some predictability in place for what's going to happen. And that's the difficult part with the action or inaction in Springfield right now, is that it's more difficult to plan. Because we are not a district that is as reliant on general state aid, it has not had the same impact on us in terms of specifically the proration of general state aid. That impacts all districts, but districts that are more reliant on state aid, it has more of an impact on them.
Mm-hmm.
So we certainly have been impacted. We've lost millions of dollars because of the proration of general state aid over the last several years. But we are continuing to work to best utilize the dollars that we are receiving to provide the educational environment and experience that we can that's most beneficial for students.
Tom, can you explain why you guys have lost millions of dollars in proration over the past couple of years? I think people might be curious about that.
Sure. So, and this gets into some of the complexities of the funding formula, but the state establishes a foundation level at which and how they arrive at the $6,119 number is a different conversation. But that foundation level has not been changed in several years. It has not gone up as costs go up. And in addition to that, those amounts, that $6,000 and change, has been prorated. So we haven't been receiving even what we are entitled to over the last, I believe, 6 or 7 years. And so the monies that we are losing due to proration are places where we have to look to make that.
That's
up
where
in
you're
other
making
areas.
Cuts. And in other words, would it be accurate for you to say that you feel that the local property tax owners are then subsidizing what the state should have been giving you? Is that an inaccurate way to describe it?
We receive significant support from our local property tax payers in terms of the revenues that we receive. It's really just, it doesn't change the amount that we receive from local property taxpayers. It just
means you're getting less.
It just means we're getting less from the state.
Last question for you. Actually, two more questions for you. But I know that Unit 4 would benefit from what Governor Rauner has proposed, maybe not so much from what Senator Menar has proposed. What would Unit 4 like to see the funding formula be?
I think what we would like to see is something that recognizes more appropriately the needs of individual students, and is not as the formula doesn't play out in a way that deals specifically with a district's available local resources or the strength of its property tax base. In Unit 4, we have a growing student population, which is certainly positive. We have a strong existing property tax base. We also have a growth in our low-income population and a growth in our English language learners population, and those are populations that as we move forward, there are some additional resources that we want to be able to dedicate to those student populations as needs continue to grow, and so I guess that touches on what we would want in terms of a resolution to the funding formula discussion, is something that truly recognizes the needs of students and doesn't, in essence, penalize communities who have built strong property tax bases but who may have a student population that has significant needs.
Right, which is how you're describing your Champaign district. You all have enough money to open for the fall and operate
Correct.
For the year. The superintendent has already said that publicly. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you're tapping into reserves. So what do you want taxpayers to know about this situation headed into the fall as it stands right now?
Well, tapping into the reserves is something that, you know, certainly you want to avoid or want to be able to do in a manner that you can control. And this is something that we can't control. If the state doesn't work out its budget situation and general state aid payments aren't being made or categoricals, what have you, those are situations that then we have to navigate. But it's a and it's difficult to do when you don't know exactly what may be coming in. But in terms of budgeting moving forward, you know, making sure that there is, you know, there is some better certainty around the funding formula and some of the other questions that have been raised regarding, you know, some of the other pending legislation. I mean, there was a property tax freeze bill that would have impacted our
district. There's a lot of questions up in the air for you guys.
More significantly.
So lots of questions that sounds like makes it obviously really tough, as we've been heard from everyone, to be doing their job. Thanks. Tom Lockman is the Chief of Financial and Legal Officer for Champaign Unit District 4. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I want to go now to Ben Bauer. He's joining us from Chicago, where he's the Deputy Director of Advance Illinois. It's a bipartisan education policy group. Hey, Ben, thanks for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Ben, you've been listening to this conversation the whole hour, and I think you've been hearing from, as we've heard from these three different types of districts with three very different demographics and very different ways they're getting funding and revenue streams. Do you think that's a reflection of the state? Lots of different needs and maybe different ways people are benefiting and losing from the current formula?
I think it actually gives a really nice complexion of the state. I mean, you know, we have approximately 850 districts in the state, so there's a really wide variety of ways that districts are getting their money and how much they're able to spend and how much local property wealth they have.
What are the different funding streams school districts can draw from?
Yeah, so, I mean, at the state level right now, there's a set of different funding streams, and they often work across purposes, and I think that really makes the situation complicated. And we have categorical funding that goes for things like special education and transportation. We have a general state aid formula that does take into consideration property wealth, as Mr. Lockman was discussing. And then we have a supplemental grant that focuses dollars on low-income students. And as you can imagine, each year in Springfield, there's sort of competing interests on each of these different funding formulas.
We heard people talking about proration. I wonder if there's a simple way to explain that to our audience.
Yeah, I mean, so over the last few years, the state has a formula, as Mr. Lockman described, and what that does is it generates a number for how much every district can claim from the state in funding. And the amount that's been appropriated has been less than the number that's claimed. And so that's ranged from around 5% less than what the claim is from districts to actually up to a 13% difference. And then the way that's been handled is to actually do a percentage cut of all districts of their state funding. So when, you know, in the situation where we had a 13% cut, we were watching districts each district get their state funding cut 13%. As you can imagine, the districts that are the most dependent on state aid, which are those districts that have low property wealth or have high poverty, then get cut the most.
Right, disproportionately, right,
yeah.
Because it's a flat cut across the board.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Ben. He's going to explain a little bit more about this with us. Again, if you have questions or comments, as always, you're welcome to give us a call, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can keep comments coming on Twitter to 21STShow, and we'll pick up this conversation in just a minute.
The 21st is made possible by Kester & Bradley, LLP, providing legal services to the Urbana-Champaign community and Illinois residents since 1895. Kester & Bradley's attorneys are committed to achieving the best results for their clients. More information is available at KesterLawLLP.com.
Welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for listening. I'm Nyla Boodoo. All this hour, we've been talking about funding for K through 12 schools. We've been speaking to superintendents all across the state, Pope County in Southern Illinois, Pena, south of Springfield, Champaign, in that school district. Now we're talking to Ben Bohr. He's with Advance Illinois. He's on the line with us from Chicago. He's the deputy director there. They're a bipartisan education policy group, and he's breaking down the school funding and all of the different formulas and helping us understand things a little bit more and willing to take your questions too. So 1-800-222-9455. If you want to join us for the next few minutes, we're going to be finishing up this conversation. Ben, I think what we're hearing, and maybe is sort of something that I'm imagining school superintendents don't want, because everyone is there to provide the best education for their students, is the current situation is having school districts sort of pitting them against each other. Do you think that's kind of an accurate description of what's happening right now?
I don't think that's the goal. I mean, the reality is that, you know, I think, you know, we want a system that, you know, addresses students' needs and that, you know, different districts have different needs. And so the state funding system is needs to be designed to take those needs into consideration. So, you know, the reality in Illinois right now is we have a pretty regressive funding for our schools. Those districts with the most low-income students get the least amount of funding. In fact, you know, a recent report by Education Trust, which is a national organization, put us as the most regressive in the country. We spend about 80 cents on the dollar for low-income students that we spend on non-low-income students. So, when I talk to superintendents around the state, they get that that different districts have different needs and that, you know, the funding should be appropriate for each of them.
And I want to ask how other states handle this, because surely this is not an unusual problem that Illinois has. But before we get to that, you said something about low-income students. And we've heard that from a couple of folks during the hour about low-income, or as we heard Tom Lockman from Champaign say, there are students that need more resources for ESL, for English as a second language student. I think that makes sense to everybody because they think, okay, they need additional teachers. Why would low-income students need additional resources?
Yeah, I mean, very often, you know, low-income students come into school with not as much background. They have perhaps don't have quite as much support at home. They don't have access to extracurriculars outside of school. They don't have access to summer programming. So, you know, all of that leads to that when we have them in the schools, that they need, you know, additional supports in the schools to meet academic standards. And, you know, we know that these students can reach these standards and do amazing things. But we often realize we have to put more support in for that. And the research is pretty clear that that's the case.
We just tweeted out a graphic, by the way. If you follow 21st Show, it's examples of state and local funding per student based on 2014 data for the districts that we've been talking to, for Pena, for Champaign, for Pope County. I wanted to ask you, get back to that Education Trust report, because if the headline is sort of Illinois has the most unfair school funding system in the nation, and ask you, how are other states handling this? And why do you think, let's start with that, how are other states handling this?
Yeah, there are two things that states do. I mean, you know, many states like Illinois are dependent a lot on local property wealth for their funding, and so the state formula, the state funding is generally put in place to help handle those discrepancies between those, and what then the state formula needs to do is needs to give more money to certain districts that have more need or less property wealth than other districts. And other states have designed their systems to be sort of integrated formulas that put all of those numbers into one place so that they can generate equitable funding. So we look at places like Massachusetts. California really recently moved to an integrated formula that have done this. And Massachusetts, for example, you know, is very dependent on local property wealth, but their state funding formula is quite quite equitable, and that, means that they are actually in sort of the top 15 of equity for the states in the country.
Are you concerned that the discussions that we're having are not in line with how other states are doing things?
You know, I think the discussions that are being had are to move to a system that looks more like what we've done here. Now, you know, obviously, in the short term, there's a lot of discussion about how exactly that occurs. But you know, I think there's a decent amount of agreement to move towards a more integrated formula that takes need into consideration. You know, how we transition to that is not an easy question. And in the meantime, you know, because of proration, we've made big cuts from low-income schools, and we need to have focus, as I think Dr. Lett said, we need to have a focus on equity as we move forward in these conversations.
What does Advance Illinois see as the best path forward for all Illinois schools? The best path forward. What would you like to see?
Oh, you know, what we'd like to see is a structural reform, right? The reality is that we're so far in the hole from an equity perspective. You know, our low income students are receiving probably about $2,500 less than our school districts with fewer low income students. That we're going to have you know, increased focus on equity over many, many years, and that requires a structural reform. Not doing that, doing a 1-year fix doesn't really get us there. That said, we're you know, as Dr. Lett said as well, we're sort of understand the situation that's currently fomenting right now, and we you know want to see schools open in the fall as well, and so figuring out a way to focus on equity, you know, perhaps in the short term, and then, you know, and figuring out our structural fix is important. But, you know, we think there's a good proposal out there in Senator Menard's bill for structural reform, and would like to see that adopted.
What do you want taxpayers to know about this issue? I mean, because people are probably coming, whether they have children in the public school districts or are helping pay to fund that through property taxes or through your rent if you're not a homeowner. How do you think people should be thinking about this?
Yeah, I think it's important to, you know, always start this conversation focused on the students. And Illinois actually has one of the largest achievement gaps of any state in the country when we look at national data. So we really, our low-income students are not performing at the levels that we see in many other states. And I think in order for us to be successful as a state, it's really important that we're able to educate all of our students and provide them with all the services that they need. And, you know, with a system like we currently have, that's very difficult to achieve.
That's Ben Bohr. He's Deputy Director of Advance Illinois, joining us from Chicago. Ben, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
I'm Nyla Boodoo. This is the 21st. Dogs across Illinois have been stricken with a new strain of canine flu, one that has left pet owners worried. Since the spring of last year, the virus has been found nationwide, but Illinois has had the highest number of cases in the country. Particularly hard hit the Bloomington-Normal area, with reportedly hundreds of cases seen recently. On the phone with us now from the College of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Illinois is veterinary and clinical instructor Dr. Gary Brummett. Welcome to the 21st, Dr. Brummett.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me today.
I think our first question is, how concerned should dog owners be about this new strain of canine flu?
It popped up, as you know, a year ago in the Chicago area, and then again last month, a very rapid rise of increase in dogs. The estimates around 150. It's already subsided a little bit. We are hoping that it's just been a mini crest.
And when we say that this is a strain of canine flu, how serious is this? Is this something where we're seeing fatalities with maybe with older dogs?
Yes, luckily the fatalities are quite low. So young, healthy dogs, or even middle-aged, healthy dogs, it's a pretty severe respiratory infection, coughing, and sometimes some nasal discharge. There have been, I think less than 10 fatalities. They've all been in dogs that had other problems and health concerns.
And what are these? So you mentioned coughing, congestion. What are other symptoms dogs who have the canine flu? What other things will be?
Most of them do not run a fever, so they feel pretty good, except they have a coughing, sometimes nasal discharge. It seems to be very easy for them to get a little bit of a secondary bacterial infection, and when that happens, they oftentimes run a fever and don't want to eat and are lethargic.
Okay. And so does it sound bad? I mean, I imagine if dogs are coughing, that might sound alarming to a dog owner.
Yeah. Right. The influenza cough is like a real deep, husky cough. Sometimes they cough, and then almost have a gag reflex, and you think something's caught in their throat. So it can be pretty uncomfortable for them.
And where particularly, we mentioned at the beginning there was an outbreak in Bloomington normally, you said that maybe it's subsiding now. Are there other parts of the state that people should be, or we're especially seeing this?
Right now it seems to be confined to Chicago area and Bloomington normal at the moment. So the only cases we've seen here at the veterinary school have been ones that have transferred from Bloomington normal. So we're hoping that it does indeed subside.
Dr. Brummett, this is probably an obvious question, but do dogs just get this because they're sniffing other dogs? Like, is it just kind of lots of nose-to-nose contact, and then obviously it gets transmitted?
Yeah, usually it takes a little bit more than just a quick sniff, but we definitely worry about dogs that go to dog parks at the moment. We recommend people tend to isolate their dogs right now and avoid dog-to-dog contact. The biggest outbreak in Bloomington was from a particular kennel, and not that the boarding kennel had done anything wrong, but obviously one dog came in there and just kind of gave it to everybody.
So if your dog's showing symptoms, how long should you keep your dog isolated?
Well, for us, the isolation, if you're showing symptoms, for sure we want to isolate them for about 3 weeks. But we're recommending people with just their normal dogs that are healthy try to avoid dog-to-dog contact.
Okay. Now, is there a vaccine for this?
Yes, there's a vaccine that came out roughly 6 months ago. We did not have it a year ago when the outbreak occurred in Chicago. Seems to be working well. So there is a new vaccine out that's proven pretty effective and actually very safe so far.
And is the recommendation the same recommendation? I mean, with the influenza, with the flu shot, we recommend that lots of humans get it. How many dogs would you, is it kind of a same wide spectrum application for dogs or maybe just for older dogs?
Yeah, I think it's good for all dogs that are going to have high contact, such as dog parks, such as boarding kennels, so you know, ones that have to board, and particularly if we're in those regions, okay? Boarding kennels, for instance, in Champaign-Urbana, most of them aren't requiring it at this time, so we're hoping that we don't have a problem with that. So for us, it's recommending for those dogs that we think are going to have increased exposure.
Dr. Brummett, is this the exact same strain that was seen in Chicago last year? Have we seen this canine influenza change at all?
Yes, this is the same strain that we had in Chicago last year. We can do the initial typing here at the University of Illinois. And then for the more specific type that has shown this, the samples have actually been sent to Cornell University and verified.
Can other pets get this?
Only dogs. So we do not have to worry about it as humans. And if we have cats that live, we don't have to worry with dogs. We don't have to worry about the cats getting the infection.
So no other animals, including humans, need to worry about this.
Exactly.
Okay.
We have our own flu viruses to think about.
Any other last advice for pet owners on this issue? It sounds like it's something that people should be maybe concerned, but not too worried about. It sounds like what you're saying.
Exactly. I don't think I would stay up nights worrying about it. But for the time being, for at least the next month and seeing what happens, yes, keep your dog home. And it's fine to get them out and get some exercise, but avoid contact with dogs that you don't know.
That's Dr. Gary Brummett. He's a clinical instructor at the College of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. Thanks, Dr. Brummett.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
The that does it for us today on the 21st. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about food allergies with a 14-year-old suburban Chicago filmmaker. Yes, I said 14 and a filmmaker. We're going to be hearing about his documentary he did about his food allergy and talking about how parents are helping each other cope with kids with severe food allergies. You can always find our past shows on the NPR One app. If you've got that, search for The 21st and you can follow us there. We're also available on iTunes and Android if you want to find past shows. All of those links and every other way to contact us, whether that's by phone, email, social media, how to find us on Facebook and Twitter, all of that is on our website. That's www.21stshow.org. We're produced by Christine Herman, Austin Keating, Travis Stansel, and Ben Thomas Payne. Technical direction comes from Jason Croft, with help today from Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our news director. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.